What's up, Mzanzi? Welcome to Farmers Inside Track episode 400. I'm your host, Octavia Spandil. Now today we dive into the world of venereal diseases, commonly known as sexual transmitted diseases in cattle. Discover the economic impact of these diseases in the cattle herds and learn about the transmissions and symptoms. In this episode, Dr. Geoff Brown, reproductive specialist and owner of Breastbed, shares management practices, diagnostic methods, and the effectiveness of vaccines, including dispelling myths about the transmissions to humans. Dr. Brown, welcome to Farmers Inside Track. It's absolutely lovely to have you with us today. And I'm very excited about the topic that we are delving into specifically regarding sexually transmitted diseases in cattle. What is the most common STDs in cattle in South Africa? And where in the country are the most prevalence in regions?
Hi, Octavia. Thanks for the invitation to chat to you about this very important topic. Sexually transmitted or venereal diseases are an important cause of economic losses in cattle in South Africa, and there are only two true venereal diseases in cattle in South Africa, but they both have a very similar course of infection, and they've got a very similar way in which they're transmitted through the herd of cattle, and they're both caused by microscopic organisms that reside on the mucous membranes of the genital tract, so on the inside of the vagina, vulva in the cow, of course, and in the uterus too, and in the bull, which is the important one, they live in the prepuce or in the sheath, so in the pouch that holds the penis. So regarding a regional prevalence of these diseases, there are no specific regions in South Africa that have a higher regional prevalence, so they both occur throughout South Africa. They wreak havoc whenever there are local outbreak hotspots. They tend to occur in specific local areas for a period of time until they are brought under control, and then they'll flare up again somewhere else. But we definitely can't say that they, for example, they occur in the Eastern Cape but not Gauteng, or they occur in Gauteng but not KZN. That's not how it works. So they occur everywhere in the country. It's commonly believed by a lot of commercial farmers that they're more common in communal grazing areas. So, for example, in the former homelands. So in my opinion, I don't think this is necessarily so, but I do believe that communal grazing conditions, like, for example, we might find in what was previously termed the homeland areas of the country, they do certainly allow for easier transmission between cattle herds, so that communal grazing often is difficult to track animals down. Identification can sometimes be an issue. Control of fences, boundaries is more difficult. So when there's a breakout of the disease in those areas, it can be a bit more difficult to control. And also, of course, in many of those areas, there's a lack of effective veterinary services, so the disease can go undetected for longer. These diseases are spread primarily by mating, but they can potentially be spread by contaminated equipment. So, for example, the equipment that you might use for artificial insemination. Or if you do AI, artificial insemination, and you use infected semen, that's obviously a possible cause. Hopefully, we should take care not to do that, though. It's a relatively minor cause of disease outbreaks, but it is possible. But of course, the most important reason for the spread of the diseases or cause is a failure of proper farm access control, where cattle from neighboring farms can wander onto the farm through broken fences. And another important cause is the introduction of new bulls into a herd. So these new bulls might well be harboring the disease. So it's very important to test bulls prior to the breeding season, and then be very careful when you choose new bulls to add. Make sure that they're tested and for the diseases prior to introduction.
What are the methods by which venereal diseases are spread between cattle?
So the first important organism is called the Trichomonas foetus, and it causes a disease called trichomonosis. So sometimes you might hear people refer to it as trich. So Trichomonas foetus is an organism which consists of only a single cell. So it's just one organism. It's a little bit like, well, it's in the same big family protists, I think, as malaria, for example, is another example. And it's got three long tails, or called flagella, and those help it to move around. And if you look at it under a microscope, it moves with an awkward sort of twitching, jerky motion. And I always like to joke that it looks a bit like a three-legged spider that's tried to climb out of a bathtub. So if you look at it under a microscope, that's what it looks like. Then the second most important one, and I'm only going to talk about two today, is a bacterium called Campylobacter foetus, or some people call it Vibrio foetus. The names of these things change fairly often. and it causes a condition that we call vibriosis. So neither of these are dangerous or hazardous to the life of the cow. So they don't pose a risk to human health. So they're not going to kill the animal and they can't be transmitted to humans. So what's important is that they're both carried around by the bulls. The bull is the major carrier, but their disease occurs in the cow. So they actually affect the cow. And they're both quite cheap to prevent, but they can be very expensive to treat. So if you actually get them in your herd, then it's a major issue. But the measures that are required to keep these diseases out of your herd are relatively cheap. If you get it, it's expensive. So I really can't emphasize that enough. If you get this in your herd, you can go bankrupt. And there's a famous quote, it was Ernest Hemingway. He was asked about how he went bankrupt, and he said, "I went bankrupt gradually and then suddenly." This pretty much sums up the spiral of economic doom that occurs in the event of an outbreak of Trichomonas or Campylobacter in a cattle herd. So if a farmer's not paying attention, you won't really notice that his production is dropping due to these diseases until it suddenly becomes obvious, and then by that stage, perhaps it's too late and too much damage has been done.
What are the primary symptoms of venereal diseases in cattle?
As I mentioned before, there are usually no outward clinical symptoms, so Campylobacter and Trichomonas don't cause cattle to get sick and die. Infected animals usually look outwardly healthy, so that's an important thing to take away. They can cause death of the embryo and they can cause abortion in cattle. Often, it's not as dramatic as it sounds, so you often won't detect the loss of pregnancy, or it's not some sort of striking a whole herd of cows aborting as you might get with another condition such as brucellosis, another important cause of abortion, which is not a venereal disease. So usually loss of pregnancy occurs very early on in pregnancy during the gestation period. There's usually not very much blood if the cow loses her pregnancies there, and usually you don't find a dead fetus, so it often goes unnoticed. And often the first thing that's noticed by the farmer is a lower than normal calving rate. So for example, if you expect 30 calves being born in a year, maybe you'll see 10 or 11, and that's because of the pregnancy loss. So an attentive cow herder might also notice that cows appear to come on heat more regularly or more often. They might come on heat at irregular intervals and then get mated by the bull. The herder who's paying attention might say, "Hey, hang on, I remember Daisy. She was mated by the bull 3 weeks ago and now she's being mated again." And then 3 weeks later, she's mated again, or 4 weeks later, she's mated again. So it's an irregular return to heat, even though she gets mated.
Can you also maybe share the impact on reproductive performance?
When cows are infected at mating, the organism migrates through the vagina and the cervix into the uterus, and then it sets up a low-grade infection. So when the embryo arrives in the uterus and starts to develop into a fetus, the organism then infects this developing fetus and its placenta. So obviously the fetus grows a placenta to nourish itself, and that's something that can get infected by these organisms, trich and vibrio. And this causes inflammation and insufficient placental function, and then swelling, and then detachment of the placenta and loss of the pregnancy. So the farmer typically will notice this pregnancy loss as an increased intercalving interval. So the intercalving interval is the period between when a cow has a calf and then when she has her next calf. So this will be increased because of the fact that she's losing her pregnancy, then reconceiving perhaps, and perhaps she carries it the second time to term. So the farmer might also notice, or often this is the farm workers or herdsmen, might notice irregular returns to heat, or else a delayed conception. And so what's happening here is the cow is being mated by an infected bull, and she's falling pregnant, and then she loses the pregnancy. So then she comes back onto heat after some variable time, and then gets mated again, and it might either carry the pregnancy normally, or will abort again, or she might come back onto heat again, get mated again, and so on and so on. So sometimes they lose the pregnancy the first time, then they can carry it through to term or carry it the second time. So if she's not reinfected by a bull, most cows will clear themselves of the infection on their own. And they'll, provided there's no bull there to constantly reinfect, cows will get better usually on their own. Although there are, in rare cases, the cow can carry the infection for a longer period. So what's important here is that the bull is the critical link in the chain of infection. So, of course, as you can imagine, if there are fewer calves born in the season, that means there's less saleable product for the farmer. And if the disease isn't identified early enough, sometimes the first time the farmer will notice is when he suddenly has 5 calves instead of 20 to sell at the end of the year. And then this can have a big shock and then can have some major economic effects.
Doc, what are some of management practices to help prevent spread of the disease?
Early identification of the disease is much easier under conditions of focused management. So this means that the animals need to be properly identified. Early identification of the disease is made much easier under conditions of focused management. So this means that animals need to be properly identified, and there must be a careful written history kept of each animal's age and origin and date of introduction and previous calving dates. It's much more difficult to identify the presence of venereal diseases if bulls are allowed to run with the cows all year round. Because under such conditions, you can have calves born at any time of the year. I mean, we tend to see a relatively focused calving period, even in those year-round breeding systems. But there's still possible that you might have late calves just normally, and more difficult to forecast the expected calf crop. It's more difficult then to take action if it's lower than expected. So you want a defined and short breeding season, followed by accurate pregnancy diagnosis, ideally by an experienced veterinarian. And these are essential for early identification of the disease. Because bulls harbor the infection, and they harbor it up there in the prepuce next to the penis, and then during mating they transmit it to the cows, they are the critical key link in testing of the animals to test for the presence of the disease. So how we diagnose it is we take a sample of cells from deep in the sheath cavity next to the penis. The sheath is the cavity that essentially contains the penis, and in this sample, which we call a sheath scrape or a sheath wash, we then send to a laboratory for testing. And then the laboratory will use one of two methods to identify if the organisms are present. One method is PCR, which a lot of us will know about after COVID, I'm sure. The test essentially looks for the organism's DNA in the sample. And then the second method is to try and grow the organism in a special growth media. And this is bacterial culture or protozoal culture for trich. And you can identify that under a microscope. So PCR is very sensitive. So if the organism is present, then there's a good chance that this technique will identify the sample as positive, and the culture method is less sensitive. But if you find an organism with culture, you can be pretty sure that the animal has the disease. So this means it's a highly specific test. This concept of sensitivity and specificity might be a little bit perhaps too much for most people. It's an important thing to understand for scientific accuracy. But the problem is with these tests, even with good laboratory tests, even though they are quite good, the major problem is that they can hide deep in the prepucial cavity next to the penis. And in carrier bulls, they can also be present in very low numbers for long periods of time. So they might just be biding their time until later when they can flare up again. So for this reason, it's hard to get a good sample and to be sure that you've got a good sample. So in other words, when you do your sheath scrape, did you get everything that you were supposed to get, or did you actually manage to collect a sample of cells from a location where the organism was actually hiding? And that's not always guaranteed. So because sampling is difficult, what we try and do is we sample a bull once a week for 3 consecutive weeks. So then if he tests positive to any one of these samples, he can be considered positive, and then we treat him as a risk to the herd.
Let's dive into the vaccines. How effective are the vaccines?
Vaccines are of great use in the control of the disease in areas where cattle are at high risk of infection. We've got vaccines against both Trichomonas foetus and Campylobacter foetus. They're great tools, and they can form part of a management program in the elimination of a disease from an infected herd. But they're not effective in bulls. And even in cows, their duration of protection is quite short. So I wouldn't recommend routine vaccination with these vaccines. So just because you own cattle doesn't mean you necessarily need to vaccinate using these particular vaccines without careful ongoing veterinary advice and monitoring. So your veterinarian must help you to design a control program, and it must be a holistic program which must prioritize elimination of the disease or exclusion of the disease if you don't have it via control of access, fence control, for example. If you somehow get the disease, you must also focus on eliminating carrier bulls in the herd. The vaccine is not a cure-all magic bullet at all, unfortunately. It's very useful and definitely has its place, but it should be done with veterinary advice and careful monitoring. So it's not a vaccine like the vaccine against Trichomonas foetus and Campylobacter foetus is not like, for example, the black quarter vaccine, which is something that you do routinely, regularly, and it must just be done, in my opinion, with careful veterinary involvement and monitoring.
I want to get into the transmissions of the venereal disease. Can it be transmitted from cattle to humans?
The short answer is no. These two diseases have been present in cattle herds for hundreds of thousands of years, and they're very specific to cattle. And they don't pose a risk to livestock or humans, and certainly not a concern regarding human health. But of course, like any disease of livestock, they can indirectly impact human health, especially under subsistence conditions. In Africa, we need all the food we can get. And if you're getting a smaller calf crop, and then there's less available meat and protein for human consumption. So in that way, it can affect human health, but definitely not by direct infection of humans. What about emerging or novel venereal diseases in cattle? So until now, we've talked about only two diseases. So one of which was caused by a single-celled organism, and the other one was caused by a bacterium. So that would have been Trichomonas fetus and Campylobacter fetus. And there are some viral diseases. So a virus is technically, it's not an organism. It's another class entirely of agent. So there are some viruses that have the capacity to be transmitted during mating, and they can also potentially cause pregnancy loss. But I don't want to talk about these now because I don't believe they're great importance compared to the massive effect of herd infection with Trichomonas fetus and Campylobacter fetus, which is a big issue in this country. So I don't want to give them too much attention.
And finally, what is your take-home message to commercializing farmers, specifically farming with cattle?
So some do's and don'ts to farmers who are commercializing that would be specific to the control of venereal diseases in their cattle. The first one would be make sure that you can accurately identify your animals and keep careful records of them. So written records are better than records that are committed to memory. And it sounds simple, but it's really, really, really critical. And focused management is essential in managing any diseases, but definitely this slightly more insidious, slightly more complex disease. The second is to make sure that you know where your cattle are at all times. If you farm communally, make sure you know who else you're farming with, whose cattle are running with your cattle. And then ideally, speak to the people who own the cattle that your cattle are running with and make sure that you are on the same page regarding strategies to control diseases and in particular venereal diseases. You must do your absolute best if possible to ensure that fences are in good condition. So that's just to prevent access by strange animals or animals of uncertain disease state. A bull finds a foreign cow is very irresistible and he's likely to try and jump a fence to get to you. And you need to make sure those fences are in adequate condition. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, don't introduce new bulls without testing them first. Try not to introduce old bulls. So old bulls are better at harboring the infection and they're also more likely to test negative when they are in fact positive. So in other words, collecting a good sample from an old bull is a bit more difficult than collecting a good sample from a younger bull. Just because the prepuce gets bigger, gets more folded. So there's more tissue inside the prepuce than an older bull for the organism to hide in. Involve your local veterinarian in your herd health plan. This is essential. So mention to them that you want specific advice on control of venereal disease in your herd. So everyone's farming circumstances are different. You want tailor-made advice, not some general advice. And obviously, I've tried to give some general principles here, but you will need to. Your circumstances will be different from that of your neighbor or from someone farming in a totally different part of the country under different circumstances, and you're going to need some more specific tailor-made advice from someone who knows how the disease works. And so I think you should involve your veterinarian. I know veterinary advice is not cheap, but it's much cheaper than no veterinary advice. So of course, as a veterinarian whose bread and butter is animal reproduction, I'm obligated to say that one very good way to reduce the risk of venereal diseases is to eliminate the use of bulls entirely. So we would rather do artificial insemination. Bulls, we know, eat a lot and they like to break things, and synchronizing heat and doing AI is a good cost-effective way to get good genetics without the expense and risk of owning a bull.
Thanks so much, Dr. Geoff Brown, reproductive specialist and owner of Breastbed. For more on the topic, visit www.foodformzanzi.co.za. And that's a wrap. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. From me, Octavius Pandil, our technical producer, Megan van der Veen, and the rest of the hashtag team FoodformZanzi. Thanks for listening.
Life in South Africa can be a lot. I mean, scroll through Twitter for a minute and tell me I'm wrong. Thank God for South Africans though, right? We're inspiring, and even on the bad days, we fight back with a smile. That's why I love Food for Mzansi so much. They're not ashamed to celebrate the ordinary unsung heroes who work every day to put food on our nation's tables. Go to foodformzanzi.co.za and never miss an inspiring story.